Hi, and welcome back. My name is Jack Register, and I am your host for Finding the Zen Within, the anger management podcast for men. Our podcast is available on lots of different platforms, and we're here to discuss how anger management shows up in the lives of men, what are some of the roots of this, and what we can do as a community about it. Our podcast is not therapy. If you're struggling with issues around anger management and need some support, places like Therapy Den, Psychology Today, and Open Path are places where you can find helpers who would be more than happy to help you. If you're struggling with thoughts of harming yourself or someone else, or thoughts of suicide, please reach out to the National Suicide Hotline. It's a text message at 988. Today's episode, we're going to talk about generational anger and the unresolved issues of history. We all know that many of us are given lineages in our families of issues or experiences where we hear a lot about how other folks have struggled with anger and how other men in our family have dealt with issues of frustration. And the interesting thing is, as a coach and counselor, I would say that what we know is that what is not resolved in one generation of a family gets handed to the next generation with a big old bow. And this is a really difficult experience because it can actually impact how we show up, because it's part of the programming that we get as children in order to how we even function in the world. It can affect our emotional regulation strategies, our relationship dynamics, and what we even understand about relationships, and the overall psychological well-being that we carry into adulthood. So we're going to talk about this for just a few minutes. So we know that there is this idea of a transmission of anger. Generational anger often gets transmitted through family patterns. If anger was poorly managed by previous generations, individuals may inherit maladaptive ways of expressing and dealing with anger or any strong emotion. This can create a cycle where anger becomes normalized and is expressed in unhealthy ways. This might look like holidays that are really, really difficult, or look at situations where someone is faced with a tough decision and they just decide not to deal with it at all and use silence and stonewalling as a way of being able to not cope with an issue, and then everyone else has to clean it up. Emotional regulation is that ability or capacity to understand what's going on with us emotionally and then do something about it. Men raised in environments where anger was not properly addressed may struggle with emotional regulation. They might find it challenging to identify, process, and express their emotions constructively because they haven't learned how to deal with this. They don't necessarily know what this really strong emotion that suddenly shows up with them, that's pulling them towards action, even means. And for a lot of folks who struggle with emotional regulation, what we in the helping world know is that there's a really big dose of fear attached to that. Fear of how past situations have shown up, fear of how other people have used their anger against us or their very difficult emotions against us, or fear that we're not going to have anybody who's going to be able to show up for us. Conflict resolution is a major, major strategy that we all need to know to live in today's world. Unresolved issues from previous generations can lead to difficulties in managing conflicts. Men might resort to aggressive or avoidance instead of seeking healthy resolutions, perpetuating these dysfunctional patterns. And what conflict resolution is really about is not simply saying, hey, let's talk this through, but it's being willing to seek a resolution in the idea that I don't have to win an argument in order to be heard. Or if somebody does something to me and I am not okay with it, I don't have to burn down the world in order to get revenge against them. It's the idea that I can actually be okay and resolve the conflicts around me without things resorting to an unhealthy level of anger and violence. Self-esteem and self-worth are major issues that do not get resolved in many generations because most people go through their entire lives with very poor self-esteem and a sense of self-worth that they are not worthy of actually being able to speak their own truth. Generational issues here often impact self-esteem. Men who grow up in environments where anger is prevalent may internalize negative beliefs about themselves, thinking that they're the reason why there's so many problems, leading to a struggle with self-worth, confidence, and handling emotions. If I don't believe that I'm an okay guy, I'm not going to believe anything whenever somebody tells me that I'm an okay guy, even if those people love me. I'm not going to think that love is actually unconditional. everything becomes transactional. And it's that old adage that I've heard many members of my own family say, it's better to actually suspect the worst and hope for the best than to hope for the best and plan for the worst. The notion, though, is that if I expect every single person that I come in contact with to have bad intentions or to be out to get me, I'm setting myself up for a lot of pain. If I have the idea that everybody's doing the best that they can and that people will take responsibility whenever something bad happens, or they'll take responsibility for their behavior if they do something that's not in alignment with who they want to be, and then plan for how I'll deal with situations when that doesn't occur, I'm able to live in the world in a much more honorable, much more loving space than one where I'm constantly in hypervigilance mode, waiting for the next attack to come. Generational anger affects interpersonal relationships in huge ways. Men might struggle with intimacy and trust, and unresolved anger can manifest in relational issues, including communication problems and emotional distance. One of the big things I see in my work around relational dynamics is just simply the idea of what does it mean to be a man? And the idea that those of us who grow up with negative patterns of this have fear and anger and aggression woven into the fabric of what it means to be a man. We must compete, we must conquer, we must dominate everything that's in front of us. Now, the idea of competition is not an unhealthy trait. The idea of being a winner is not an unhealthy trait. But there are 7 billion of us on this planet. We do not need to conquer every single one of them in order to be a good guy. We can actually live in honor and live in peace and be successful in our life without feeling like we have to superly be aggressive and dominate every single situation that we're in. And so this idea of winning or losing sets up a competition where one person is better than someone else. We all want to have that moment where we win the race, get the trophy for doing the really cool thing, or have that big promotion at work. But it doesn't necessarily mean that someone else has to suffer in order for us to make that happen. This notion, how this shows up for us in terms of how we interact with other men and with the women and children in our lives, says a lot about where we really are with ourselves and with our past. I grew up with military folks. So for me, a lot of my childhood was really looking at the idea of you have to follow orders. You don't get to ask questions why. We are the ones who know best. And anyone who knows me will tell you that that is not necessarily the way that Jack shows up in the world. I tend to need to know and understand and buy into what's going on before I'm going to be willing to give energy to something. And now at this stage of my life, I don't have any capacity for folks who want to compete with me or want to do the one up, one down situation. I have left many a situation and job when it felt like that was what was expected, because that doesn't do anything in order to kind of create the community that I want around me professionally, which then translates into how much energy I have to be with the people who are important to me personally. I don't live in anger anymore. Anger shows up as an emotion when something needs to change, but I don't live in the middle of all of that hostility as a default for how I should show up in the world. Emotional suppression is a really important issue to come up. In some families, emotions are supposed to be suppressed or invalidated. Men growing up in these environments might suppress their feelings, leading to internalized anger and potential mental health issues such as depression or anxiety. There are many of us who have gotten messages that say, men do not do dot, dot, dot. And because of this, this internalized idea of reality shows up in such a way that we feel like, and I know I've had these messages myself, if I cry, if I show strong emotion about something that is not anger, then there's somehow I'm weak. Somehow I'm not being the man I'm supposed to be. Emotions are a part of the fabric of being a human. Emotions are information for us. They're energy that tells us something's going on around us. You can't turn off your emotions. That's impossible to do. You will not be a healthy human mentally, emotionally, or psychologically if you try and do that. And there are bunches of examples of folks in the world who try and live that way and find themselves, as life goes on, being unable to function at all. Generational issues can impact how men form their identities. If their emotional experiences and expressions are shaped by unresolved anger, it can hinder their ability to develop a stable and healthy sense of self. This idea that identity formation for many men is painted over and imbued with notions of anger and hostility, in that I have to be this kind of man in order to be an okay man. For many years, when I looked back on the men in my lineage on both my mother and father's side, I found that many of them had this idea that if I did not show up in a certain way and didn't act in a certain way, they might have other names for me. Well, that's not really okay at all, because it doesn't mean that just because a man doesn't express those feelings that he is anything else. He is a person. And our gender identity is built upon how we show up in the world. It's not built upon our emotional expression that other people get to judge and say who we are in the world. This really showed up a lot for me personally whenever I was a wrestler back in school. I found myself at times not being able to enjoy the sport because I had gotten to a place where I would literally see the person on the mat as someone I had to hurt, not someone I was competing with and enjoying a sport with. And this sort of idea that I had to go out there with the notion of hurting people got me to a point where I don't even remember many of the matches, because to be honest, I would go into rage blackouts, which is a very unhealthy state to be in, and not one that is easy to come out of once you come out of the sport. And so this notion that identity as anger is something that we're going to talk about later in the podcast. And I have some folks who want to help us dig into that a little bit more. Men may adopt maladaptive coping mechanisms such as substance abuse or even violence strategies if they have not been taught healthier ways to deal with anger and emotional distress. The interesting thing is that the research tells us that anger can actually become an emotional coping mechanism, that when we don't know what else to do, we default to anger. When we don't know what else to do, we default to violence or aggression that might even lead to anger. Or substance use, for example, going and getting completely blitz drunk and then getting into a bar fight kind of thing. That's the one that's the most common. That changes the way families are able to function. That changes whether or not this guy is a safe person for his family to be around and for his own children to see. And that's how the patterns get replicated generation after generation, is that we may not be exactly the same kind of dad that our dad was, but if we're still showing up in a way where our sons and daughters are scared of us, we're showing up in a way where we're telling them that anger is a normal way in families to raise children. That's not unconditional love. One of the things I say to clients all the time and have for years is that you know you are a good parent when your children are adults and they voluntarily want to spend time with you. That's the key thing to say, that you did a good job. Kids don't expect moms and dads to be perfect, because that's impossible. Kids expect mom and dad to be unconditional and to love them, not scare them, not terrify them. When the parents become the monsters for the kids then learn how to run from monsters, not how to honor their family lineage and honor their parents. Social and cultural expectations around masculinity can exacerbate anger management issues on a generational level. Traditional views that discourage emotional expression in men can reinforce unhealthy anger management patterns. This is probably one of the most significant issues, that when I talk to groups of men about this idea that we are constructed in terms of our identity as men to be rageful, and that that's a good thing. That when I bring that up, is that's a decision that we made as a community and as a culture, and does not have to be how we move forward in the world. I get folks who look at me sometimes with absolute terror in their eyes, because it really means rejecting or almost getting rid of the entire history of who they thought they were. And that's something that many, many men struggle with a lot. So I also wanted to give some ideas about mythology around revenge anger. In my work, I do a lot with folks around the idea that if I am wronged, then I have a right to go and right that wrong, even if that means I commit violence as a response to that. And so I have what are called the 10 myths of revenge anger. Myth number one, revenge provides closure. In reality, revenge often exacerbates feeling of anger and does not provide true closure or resolution. It tends to perpetuate cycles of harm rather than facilitating healing or understanding. That's something that we all really need to think about is, do you really get out of this what you really want? Or is the old adage of an eye for an eye actually makes the entire world blind? Here's one that's really important. Revenge is justified if you're wronged, when the reality is feeling wrong doesn't make revenge justifiable or even effective. It often leads to further conflict and doesn't address the underlying issues at all. So yes, you might get what you think is personal justice, but you may not feel anything because of it. And then you just have more to deal with because now you both have a sense of being wronged, which just kind of perpetuates the idea that revenge needs to continue. And in some families, there are these generational feuds that have been going on for years because people will not let go of the idea that just because some slight happened many years ago, that we have to stay angry about it. Another myth is that revenge makes you feel better. While revenge might provide a temporary sense of satisfaction, it often leads to lingering regret, guilt, or additional problems, undermining, long-term emotional well-being. It's a really important point. The next one, revenge is a natural response, when in reality, while revenge may feel like a natural response to a slight, it is actually a maladaptive coping mechanism. Healthy emotional responses include addressing the root causes of anger in constructive ways. So that means that if my brother and I have been at each other for years about he took a girl that I liked back in high school, and I'm going to perpetuate the conflict between us because of that incident, as opposed to addressing that core issue in a healthy way so we can be done with it and then figure out what our relationship looks like. We don't have a relationship now other than one that is built out of anger and hostility. So figuring out how to do that differently is really important. I always say to clients a lot, you know, you have a choice in these sort of situations. Do you want to be right? Do you want to feel justified? Or do you want to still keep this relationship? And in some cases, people will tell me, no, Jack, I don't want to keep the relationship. I don't care. I don't care what the cost is. I'm going to have my say and I'm going to get my revenge. And I'll say, okay, that sounds completely and totally legitimate. How about the radical possibility that if you do that, no one is going to have any kind of healing, and this is going to go on for years, and your children will then have to deal with it as well. Another myth is that revenge will solve the problem. Revenge rarely resolves underlying issues and can create more problems. It often fails to address the fundamental concerns and may escalate conflicts even further. All you have to do is watch popular movies to be able to see that play out. The next one, you need to get even to be respected. True respect in reality comes from handling situations with dignity and integrity, not from seeking revenge. Constructive conflict resolution garners respect more efficiently. Now, I know that there are many people out there who will say, if I'm disrespected, then I have the right to gain that back and that people must respect me. That is a learned and earned characteristic, not one that is simply given to you because of who you are. I've had many examples in my own life where I would have people say, I am your father, I'm your uncle, I am your this, I am your that, and I demand that you respect me. And I would simply look at somebody and say, if you treat me with dignity, I'll treat you with dignity. If you disrespect me, I'm not going to respect you. But that doesn't mean I'm going to harm you. And I don't care who that is. And as I've gotten older, that might mean cutting people out of my life who can't show up in a way that honors who I am so that I can honor who they are. And I just simply remove them from my life. You need to have a sense of hope. Hope, in my opinion, is how we get to the place of letting anger dissolve and finding a different way of interacting with each other. And that's one of the lessons that keeps coming back to me more and more as this podcast continues to grow and we gain more listeners and I have conversations with folks about that, is that really what the purpose of what I'm trying to do is to give us a community of hope so that we can look at things differently. Another myth in revenge is that revenge will teach the offender a lesson. Revenge often fails to teach meaningful lessons. It can lead to further animosity and prevent the possibility of constructive dialogue and resolution. In many cases, revenge just keeps the cycle going, where one person feels a slight, they go back and deal with that slight, so another slight is created, and so on and so on and so on. And it just creates more and more anger and unresolved conflict that then just keeps going for generations. Another myth is that revenge is an act of strength, when in reality, seeking revenge is often an act of emotional vulnerability and weakness. Strength is in managing emotions and conflicts in healthy, mature ways. And again, if my brother stole a girl from me in high school, it doesn't mean I should hate him now that we're both in our 50s because of that act. If I go and say, we need to resolve this so we can figure out how to be around each other, we may have generational issues of our family impacting this conflict between us, which could go on for decades. And I've worked with many people in my career who have had exactly that experience. Something happened when they were kids and they have held on to it in such a way that they cannot resolve it. And the issue is that when someone is harmed, they get to name how that harm gets dealt with. And the person who did the harm actually needs to own it in a way that actually is meaningful, not just simply saying, well, you deserved whatever happened. That doesn't do anything at all. And that's not a conflict resolution strategy. Another myth is that revenge is an effective way to regain control, when in reality, revenge can actually lead to a loss of control and further entrench feelings of anger and resentment. Gaining control involves addressing issues calmly and assertively, not aggressively. And then lastly, the last myth is revenge is a one-time solution, when in reality, revenge is often a temporary fix that doesn't address the ongoing nature of emotional and relational problems. It tends to create more problems than solving them. So all in all, the big thing here is to think about the idea of how does generational anger show up for you? Do you find that when you talk to folks in your family tree or in your lineage, that there are times you have to leave certain topics alone because we all know not to bring up something or Uncle Jack's going to get really, really upset? That's the conversation I have for you today. I'm really glad that you're with us today. And if you want to find out more about what we're about, please check out my website at jack-register.com and look for finding the Zen Within. Again, our podcast is not therapy. If you're needing support, please reach out. If you're having thoughts of harming yourself or someone else, or thoughts of suicide, please reach out to the National Suicide Hotline. It's a text message at 988. Thank you so much for being here today, and I really appreciate your time and your capacity.